5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and this is MPBN Radio. Ahead on Maine Things Considered this evening, Governor Paul LePage has planned to create a public defender system in Maine, the University of Maine's commitment to local food, and the effort to restore eelgrass in Maine. We'll have those stories in your state newscast just ahead. First, this national and world news from NPR. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. After leading the state's Department of Environmental Protection for the past 4 years, Commissioner Patricia Aho is stepping down to take a position as a state office representative for Senator Susan Collins in Augusta. A.J. Higgins has more.
A former lobbyist for chemical and drug companies, Patty Aho presided over the DEP at a time when the state was challenging federal water quality standards, reevaluating the use of toxic chemicals in many products, and reforming a wide range of regulatory standards. Rockport Representative Joan Welch, the Democratic chair of the legislature's Environment and Natural Resources Committee, said Aho had been an effective commissioner.
She's been a pretty good communicator with the chairs of the committee, but given this administration and given the governor, I think she's worked pretty hard to have good communication and understanding. We do have some differences.
The governor's office said Avery Day, a member of the governor's staff, will serve as acting commissioner of the department effective September 7th. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
And an attorney for record-setting hiker Scott Jurek, who completed the Appalachian Trail in just 46 days, says his client will contest three summonses issued by Baxter State Park. Jurek was cited for littering, hiking with a group larger than 12 people, and consuming alcohol after his celebration atop Mount Katahdin on July 12th. Park officials say he violated park rules. Attorney Walt McKee says he thinks the park's using his client as a scapegoat to highlight his concerns, or its concerns, rather, about overuse and rules violations in a park intended to be forever wild. He also says a settlement with the Penobscot County District Attorney now appears unlikely.
Scott was shocked that he was issued the summonses, especially the one for littering, which is because apparently some champagne spilled on the rocks. So just very odd in the first place. And especially for Scott Jurek, he's somebody who thinks very much about leaving no trace. So that one especially was disappointing for Scott, and fully intends to contest that.
The case is set for another conference on September 9th. If an agreement's not reached, McKee says there will be a trial. A call to the Penobscot County District Attorney's office was not returned. In weather tonight, clear skies with some fog developing overnight and lows in the low 50s to mid 60s north to south. Tomorrow, sunny and humid statewide, highs in the mid 70s to mid 80s. This is MPBN. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. If you commit a crime in Maine, you don't have the money to pay for an attorney. The state will cover the cost. But unlike many other states, which use public defenders, Maine assigns indigent cases to private practice attorneys and pays them an hourly rate. Governor Paul LePage has proposed a change to that system. He's introduced a bill that would create a new type of public defender system in Maine that he says would do a better job and save taxpayer money. Mal Leary has the details.
The governor's bill would set up a new system that would contract with lawyers around Maine to provide indigent legal services, possibly as their full-time job, but not as employees of the state. The bill was drafted by the Office of Policy and Management at the governor's request. Jonathan Labonte is director of the agency.
The governor's often said, if you can find it in the yellow pages, we probably don't need the government doing it. In the case of defense attorneys, there are places in the yellow pages. So why not look at a system where the state can provide a contract model to do that?
The proposal would create one new government position within the Indigent Legal Services Commission. That person, the public defender, would coordinate contracts with attorneys across the state to represent poor Mainers facing possible time in jail. Senator David Burns, a Republican from Whiting, is the co-chairman of the Judiciary Committee and is sponsoring the bill.
We're the only state that isn't looking at something or doing something like this, so maybe it's time we reevaluate it. If we can do the same job or better for less money, I think we need to consider it.
The House co-chairman of the panel, Democrat Barry Hobbins of Saco, says it may be time to take a new approach. But Hobbins, who is an attorney, says he does not want to see the creation of a large bureaucracy of full-time public defenders that would likely be more expensive than the current system.
You can do a creative hybrid system where you don't just hire public defenders. We have a very successful program in Somerset County, which a group of lawyers contracted with the state. And I think that's the approach to take.
The Somerset County contract arrangement involves three attorneys, which allows some flexibility when conflicts arise. Phil Moeller is one of the attorneys holding the Somerset County contract and says, so far, it has worked pretty well.
Each attorney keeps their own database, and when cases get assigned, we need to make sure that we do not have conflicts. And frankly, sometimes there are. That requires one of the other attorneys to take over that case. And very rarely will we end up in a situation where all three attorneys that are in the contract are conflicted out.
When that happens, the Indigent Legal Services Commission assigns the case to another attorney in the area. Moeller says any new system should maintain that flexibility and should also take into account the special circumstances of homicide cases, which are extraordinarily expensive. Megan Maloney, the district attorney for Kennebec and Somerset counties, believes the Somerset model could work in most parts of the state.
We have to have the best possible defense for every indigent defendant in order for our system of justice to work. So we have to carefully evaluate this and make sure that we're picking the best model.
And says Robert Ruffner, while the Somerset County model has won high marks from defense lawyers and prosecutors, the cost and complexity of legal defenses are increasing. Ruffner is a defense attorney and director of the Portland-based Maine Indigent Defense Center.
A case that would have been just reading a police report 5 years ago now involves watching or listening to an hour or two of audio and or videotape. And those are things that will affect, no matter how you structure the delivery, how long it takes to adequately represent someone.
The Maine Indigent Defense Center and the UMaine Law School are planning a forum this fall on the governor's proposal and possible alternatives. The legislature's Judiciary Committee plans a public hearing on the proposal after lawmakers reconvene in January. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
Dining halls in the University of Maine system will soon feature more Maine food. The state's public university announced today that at least 20% of its food will be locally sourced by 2020. As Patty White reports, advocates for local food say the decision will elevate students' dining experience and farmers' bottom lines.
When University of Maine at Farmington Junior Sam Birch envisions his dream plate at a campus dining hall, he sees locally raised chicken surrounded by plenty of local vegetables.
Just any sort of green, essentially. If it comes from a local farm, in my opinion, it tastes a lot better because I know where it's coming from and I feel more comfortable eating it.
Birch grew up farming with his grandfather in Windsor, and he's aware of the effort it takes to grow things like beans, tomatoes, potatoes, and squash.
I want to make sure those that put in a lot of the hard work, like people like my grandfather and other local farmers that I've talked to, they get the opportunities they deserve.
Birch has been working on the Real Food Challenge campaign at the UMaine system. It's part of a coalition of organizations that have been pushing the state's public universities to purchase more food from local sources. System spokesman Dan Demerit says the university wants to be a better customer for Maine's farmers and fishermen, and it's prepared to make the commitment official.
There's local food available on all our campuses now, but this is a significant step forward.
On Monday, the UMaine system put out a bid for a 10-year food service contract. Demerit says it will choose a vendor based in part on plans to purchase sustainably raised local food that's produced within 175 miles of any campus. The contract requires that 15% of dining hall food come from local producers the first year.
And the goal is to increase 1% annually through 2020.
The university system estimates by the time the number reaches 20%, it will spend more than $1.5 million annually on local food. Senior Vice President at Maine Farmland Trust, Marla O'Byrne, says that's a big piece of the agriculture market.
Because it provides access to, you know, growing consumers, and it introduces students to local foods, and it introduces them to the agricultural system in the state of Maine. So it has benefits above and beyond just the market that it provides.
Farmer Sam Blackstone of Circle B Farms in Caribou is thrilled about the extra stability it will provide farmers, especially during the winter months.
You know, instead of laying off my crew in the wintertime, there's probably going to be a couple of them I can keep around. So it's going to be a boost all the way around for everyone.
Student Sam Birch says while he's excited about the university system's decision, the Real Food Challenge campaign will continue to push for even stronger commitments to invest in locally sourced, humanely raised food. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
And finally, today on Maine Things Considered, it's everywhere, and the invasive European green crab is blamed for wreaking havoc on Maine's shellfish populations in the last few years. Now, the crab is also suspected of having another negative impact on Maine's marine ecosystem. Researchers suspect the crabs are responsible for a decline in eelgrass, and they're trying to do something about it. Tom Porter reports on one experimental eelgrass restoration project in Midcoast Maine.
Simpson's Point in Brunswick lies in an estuary at the upper end of Casco Bay. It's a scenic spot where the woodlands meet the water. Less than 5 years ago, though, harbour master Dan Devereaux says the view was noticeably different, at least at low tide, when eelgrass was visible pretty much everywhere. Now there's hardly any.
It was around 2011, 12, we noticed a drastic decline.
Devereaux estimates a 90% reduction in McCoit Bay alone. Eelgrass, which lives in the shallow waters near the shoreline, is prime habitat for a number of aquatic life forms. So Devereaux decided it was time to act. He got in touch with Dr. Hilary Neckles, a scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey and a specialist in estuarine and wetland systems. This summer, Neckles and her team launched an experimental eelgrass restoration project, one of only two in the state. I caught up with her at Simpson's Point.
Dr. Neckles, hello.
Hi, Tom. How are
Neckles
you?
Has come to inspect a handful of eelgrass plants her team planted on the seabed in July. She points to some buoys out in the bay, marking where the plants were put down. Soon she'll be floating face down with face mask and snorkel, checking out how much the plants have grown.
I call it stealth monitoring. You just have to sneak up on the plants so that you don't disturb the substrate, so that you can see how many plants there are.
The restoration project comes at a time when scientists are also trying to determine how green crabs are affecting eelgrass. Neckles says the green crabs uproot the plants in their search for food, particularly shellfish such as clams and mussels, which are buried under the sea floor, or the substrate, as she calls it.
Big green crabs that are foraging in the substrate and they're digging up all this eelgrass. And at the same time that they're doing that, they're also increasing the turbidity.
That's because eelgrass is good for absorbing impurities in the ocean, explains Neckles. So when crabs destroy the vegetation, they're also depressing the water quality. Neckles says the speed with which eelgrass declined across the state took everybody by surprise. According to the DEP, eelgrass quantity in all of Casco Bay was down more than 50% by 2013.
It was incredibly sudden on ecological timescales. It was an acute disturbance, and it was caused by the invasive European green crab population explosion that we had in 2012, 2013.
In this part of Casco Bay, Neckles says fewer green crabs have been spotted in the last 2 years, and there is some eelgrass recovery. But she says there's a long way to go before the plants are brought back to healthy levels.
This is going to take the eelgrass a long time to recover here. And so we're testing, can we jumpstart recovery through restoration? Is the water clarity sufficient to permit eelgrass growth?
One of the difficulties in tackling the green crab problem is the lack of a statewide monitoring program. Numbers are thought to have declined in this part of Casco Bay, but just a few miles away in Freeport, Professor Brian Beale of UMaine Machias says crab populations are about the same, though Beale, who runs a crab trapping program, says he's noticed a change in size.
It's just that the animals are much, much smaller, and we don't know where the large ones have gone, whether they died or what the story is, but we know that there are just plenty of very, very small ones around, and, you know, that's disconcerting.
Meanwhile, at Simpson's Point, low tide has come, and it's time for Hilary Neckles to zip up her wetsuit and swim out to check on the eelgrass plants.
Thanks so much. I'm heading out.
Good luck.
Neckles says the success of this eelgrass restoration project won't be known until next summer, when the final plant measurements are done. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
And later this week, we'll tell you about one shellfish farmer's unique way of dealing with the green crab problem. Now, at 13 minutes before 6 o'clock, it's time to check the weather forecast with our meteorologist, Paul Cousins.
For the third year in a row, for much of the state, August did not deliver 90-degree temperatures. However, for some southern towns, we may exceed that benchmark in September. Tonight, skies become moonlit throughout the state, valley fog by dawn, low 50s north, mid-60s south. Tomorrow, sunny and humid statewide, 75 to 85 north to south, notably cooler right at the seacoast. Wednesday will be the hottest day of the week. Some sunshine, then afternoon thunder over in the northern half of the state. Across the entire coastal plain, mostly sunny and very humid, 80 to 93 north to south. Thursday, the northern third of the state, mostly sunny and much drier. A mix of sun and clouds and only slightly drier farther south. Friday, dazzling sunshine for all and comfortable, highs near 80, cooler at the coast. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to A.J. Higgins, Susan Sharon, and Barbara Caridi. I'm Nora Flaherty.